Welcome once again to our series of programs on salvation history. The New Testament, the Acts of the Apostles, Epistles, and the Book of Revelation. This is Chuck Johnson, teacher at John Paul II Catholic High School in Terre Haute, Indiana. Our guest again is Ron Eldred, who teaches history and religion at John Paul II. Ron, let's start by giving us a brief summary of what we've been discussing during the past few sessions of this series.
We had been looking at the history of the church during the time of the Acts of the Apostles. After Emperor Tiberius died in 37 AD, he was succeeded by his insane great-nephew, Caligula. He was such a bad man and ruler that he was assassinated in 49 by his own personal bodyguard. He was succeeded by the elderly Claudius, who was a fairly decent man and ruler, but was poisoned by his hateful wife, Agrippina, after a short reign. He, in turn, was succeeded by his insane stepson, Nero. And we've already discussed his reign. But remember, it was he who unleashed a great persecution of the Christians to divert attention from himself after a great fire had destroyed much of the city of Rome. Rumor had it that he had the fire set to clear out a section of the city he wanted on which to build a new palace. And it was during these persecutions that St. Peter and St. Paul were martyred, probably in the year 67 AD. Well, of course, he was a poor ruler. He was such a poor ruler that he was eventually declared an outlaw by the Senate and forced to commit suicide. After his death, Rome became so politically unstable that four emperors held office in the year 69. This has gone down in history as the year of the four emperors. A civil war ensued, and three of the emperors experienced violent deaths. The last of the four, Vespasian, was a general leading an army against a Jewish rebellion in Judea at the time of the death of the last of the three. He returned to Rome as soon as he heard the news of the emperor's death to claim the throne for himself, leaving his son Titus in charge of the army in Judea. Vespasian was the only Roman emperor between 37 and 96 AD who is known for certain to have died a natural death. It was said of him that he was a practical man, he was not greedy for power. He ruled well for 10 years and did not persecute Christians.
Okay, regarding the Jewish revolt and the Roman conquest of Jerusalem, tell us about the Jewish revolt against the Romans, the outfall of that.
Actually, there were three revolts over a period of about maybe 50 years or so. The first Jewish-Roman war took place between 66 and 73 AD, sometimes called the Great Revolt, which was the first of three major rebellions by the Jews of Judea against the Roman Empire. The second revolt was the Quitos War in 115-117 AD, and the third was the Bar Kokhba Revolt of 132-35 AD. The revolt began in the year 66 AD because, according to the Jewish historian Josephus, whom we quoted quite a few times in our series, the violence started at Caesarea Maritima in 66, provoked by Greeks who were sacrificing birds in front of a local synagogue. Josephus says that the Roman garrison did not intervene in the struggle, which exacerbated or made worse long-standing religious tensions between the Greeks and the Jews. In reaction, a Jewish temple official stopped prayers and sacrifices for the Roman emperor at the temple. The flames of the rebellion were fanned when Jews protested Roman taxation and engaged in random attacks on Roman citizens, perceived Jewish traitors in in Jerusalem. In response, the Roman governor sent troops into the temple. Of course, that's in Jerusalem. And took 17 talents from the temple treasury, which, of course, was a huge sum of money, justifying his action by claiming that the money was for the emperor. He escalated the revolt by sending soldiers into Jerusalem for the next day to arrest a number of the city leaders, who he later had whipped and crucified, even though some of them were Roman citizens. Short order, outraged nationalist Judeans took up arms against the Romans and quickly overran their military garrison in Jerusalem, causing the pro-Roman king, Agrippa II, who is actually, if I recall right, a great-grandson of Herod the Great, and his sister to flee from Jerusalem to Galilee. Within a relatively short time, the rebel militias had killed or driven all Roman citizens and pro-Roman officials out of Judea.
Their initial success seems was not to last for long. Is that true?
That's true. Because rebellion was one of the acts that the Romans simply wouldn't tolerate. It always brought a swift and violent response anywhere in the empire. Stamp out the rebellion in Judea, the Romans began, or the Roman legate, or legate, in Syria, Cestius Gallus, assembled an army of 30,000 troops. He marched into Galilee, of course, which was in the northern part of the Jewish territory. And then into Judea, taking city after city back from the rebels, killing thousands of the Jewish rebels and other people as well, including men, women, and children in some instances. However, he turned back his forces from Jerusalem for some unknown reason, and as they made their way back toward the coast, were ambushed and defeated by Judean rebels at the Battle of Beth Horon, a defeat that shocked the Roman Empire leadership. In other words, of course, when news got all the way back to Rome. Military historians consider this the worst defeat in the history of the Roman Empire armies by rebel forces in the various provinces throughout the Roman Empire. Some 6,000 troops were killed, and many more wounded in the battle as Gallus ignominiously fled the battlefield, that is, the general.
Well, then after this humiliating defeat, the Romans must certainly have been eager for revenge.
It was inevitable that the Jewish successes would not last long against the armed forces of the largest and most powerful empire that the world had ever seen until that time. Instead of the Syrian prefect Gallus, Emperor Nero, Nero's the emperor at this time, appointed General Vespasian to put down the rebellion. He assembled an army of over 60,000 men from among the various Roman legions, including one led by his son Titus, and Roman allies, including soldiers led by King Agrippa II. Vespasian began his campaign in 67 AD by defeating and occupying many cities in Galilee. By the year 68, Jewish resistance in the north had been crushed. Vespasian made Caesarea Maritima his headquarters. Carefully avoiding any of the confrontations with the rebels at Jerusalem for the time being. He was very reluctant to attack and lay siege to the fortified Jerusalem because he feared that he would just simply lose too many men in the process.
Now, didn't the Jews harass the shipment of grain to Rome during the Jewish War?
Yes, this was made possible because when Gallus first invaded Galilee in 67 AD, some of the leaders of the rebellion and their men occupied the port city of Jaffa, from which they attacked given ships headed for Rome. And this was very important, you see, to the Romans, this trade was, because they depended on imported grain from the north of Africa, especially from Egypt, to feed the hungry masses in Rome, because Italy couldn't grow enough grain to satisfy this need. This was a time of bread and circuses that we've heard about in history, when the Roman people were becoming very degenerate in a lot of ways. The majority of them were, and didn't want to work. They received free bread or cheap bread, wheat. They could, of course, make into bread. And, of course, during the time of Vespasian, if I recall right, there were well over 100 days during the year that the games were held in the Colosseum and places like that, you know, for their entertainment.
Right.
About this matter, Josephus wrote, quote, "They also built themselves a great many piratical ships and turned pirates upon the seas near to Syria and Phoenicia and Egypt, and made those seas unnavigable to all men." He continues by saying the leaders of the collapsed northern revolt, John of Giscala and Simon Bar Giora, managed to escape to Jerusalem and packed with militants and many factions and largely cut off by Roman forces. Jerusalem quickly descended into anarchy, with the radicals taking control of large parts of the fortified city. In fact, different parts of the city were controlled by different radical groups. Brutal civil war, of course, then erupted between the zealots and the fanatical Sicarii, executing anyone advocating surrender to the Romans. And by 68 AD, the entire leadership of the Southern Revolt was assassinated in infighting, some at the notorious Zealot Temple siege. It kind of reminds me of that part of the world today. You think of Egypt, you think of Syria, you think of Iraq, and these people get foaming at the mouth. It seems like it's some, what we would think sometimes a slight provocation, but they're willing to kill each other. Even in Syria, you have these groups that are fighting against the Assad government there, but they're also infighting
among
themselves.
Fighting against each other, yeah. Now, wasn't this about the time of Nero committed suicide? Because we're, 68 A.D.?
Yes. While the war in Judea was in progress, great events were occurring in Rome. When Nero committed suicide in 68 A.D., his successor, Galba, was murdered after just a few months by a man by the name of Otho, who took his place, which triggered a civil war that came to be known as the Year of the Four Emperors. While all of this was going on, Vespasian's legions in Judea declared him emperor in 69 AD, causing him to return to Rome. He decided upon gaining further widespread support to return to Rome to claim the throne from an usurper, leaving his son Titus to finish the war in Judea.
Now, how did the war go after Vespasian left for Rome?
Well, with his departure, Titus, his son, led the Roman army in conquering town after town, causing many Judeans to seek shelter in the fortified city of Jerusalem. Within the city, several factions fought each other for control of the city. In other words, while the city was like being under siege by the Roman army all the way around, they were fighting among themselves. Eventually, the zealot factions won the struggle and still could field a significant number of troops to oppose an immediate Roman conquest of the capital. Unable to breach the city's defenses, the Romans established a permanent camp just outside the city walls. Then they dug a trench around the circumference of the walls, followed by building a wall as high as the city walls themselves all the way around the city. And anyone attempting to flee the city who was caught in the trench between the two walls would be captured, crucified, and placed in lines on top of the dirt wall facing in Jerusalem. And it was reported that as many as 500 were crucified each day. In other words, trying to escape the city. The two zealot leaders, John of Giscala and Simon Bar Giora, continued fighting each other and joined forces to defend the city only when the Romans began to construct ramparts for the siege. Titus settled down to starve the people out the spring of 70 A.D. Father Arminio, in his very good history of the church, history of the Catholic Church, states that, quote, "For 5 months the people of Jerusalem lived in horror as food supplies ran out and Roman catapults bombarded the walls with 100-pound stones. It was sensible and easier for the Romans to play a waiting game for the besieged, with the besieged city, because during the infighting inside the city walls, a stockpile supply of dried fruit was intentionally burned by the radical Sicarii faction of the zealots to induce the defenders to fight against the Romans rather than negotiating a peace with them. which resulted in many city dwellers and soldiers dying of starvation during the siege. In other words, they destroyed their, one faction destroyed a lot of the food that they would have needed, of course, to survive during the siege.
Just a clarification, when we talk about the Zealots, my understanding is it's always been a group that was extremely pro-Jew, belligerently hostile to the presence of Rome. Is that understanding?
Oh, yes, and they go back to the time before Jesus even.
Yeah, because this was spoken of back then.
Well, okay. One of the 12 disciples
was a zealot.
Believed to have been a zealot.
Yeah.
Now, it's not sure whether he actually was a member of that particular faction or whether or not he was just zealous for the law. That's been debated
as
by historians.
Paul would be.
Yeah, as
truly
Paul certainly was.
So what we're dealing with then is this is a long simmering hostility against Rome.
Yes, and it wasn't only against Rome, it was also against the Greeks. Because you have to keep in mind keep in mind that the Greeks, of course, had controlled that area for several centuries before the
Alexander.
Romans came and took it away from the Greeks.
Okay.
The Roman historian Tacitus estimated that the number of persons besieged in the city to be no fewer than 600,000, and that according to one scholar, men and women alike, in every age engaged in armed resistance. Everyone who could pick up a weapon did. Both sexes showed equal determination, preferring death to life that involved expulsion from their country. The Jewish historian Josephus, who was a general who switched early on to the Roman side, puts the number at the besiege in the city of near 1 million. A lot of people, of course, around the surrounding countryside
had fled
into the city,
right.
You know.
And then they were burning food.
Yes.
And, wow. Okay. The city finally fell to the Romans in 70 A.D.
Yes, certainly the outcome was inevitable. One account has it that the Romans began by attacking the weakest spot, the third wall. It was built shortly before the siege, so it was not very well built. Battering rams crushed against the gates. There was a new machine that the Romans had, siege machine, that was used. It could fling many lead balls at once. By the summer of 70, the Romans had breached all the city's walls and then ransacked and burned nearly the entire city, except the Sicarii, led by Simon Bar Giora, held the upper city. During the final stages of the Roman attack, zealots under John of Giscala and Eleazar ben Simon still held the temple on Mount Moriah. Keep in mind that's where, of course, the temple was located, was on Mount Moriah. The Roman soldiers had to fight their way up the hill every inch of the way. But finally, a few made it to the top. Father Armenio relates the story that one soldier found himself standing in front of an open window of the temple. Frustrated and angry because of the bitter fighting, he picked up a lighted torch and threw it inside the building. The building went up in flames. You have to keep in mind, a lot of people say, well, how did the building burn? Because it's made of stone. But actually, all the roof had big timber, cedar beams on the ceiling, and a wooden roof, and it had paneling on the inside. Right. The whole inside of the temple had very, very expensive, heavy paneling. And so, of course, once that caught a fire, it just gutted it out pretty quickly. The Roman army, of course, showed no mercy. They went through the city killing and looting. Josephus claims that 1,100,000 people were killed during the siege, that is, before this final time here, the entire siege. A sizable portion of those were at Jewish hands. In other words, they killed one another due to their infighting and to illnesses brought about by hunger and disease and things of that sort. The Romans rounded up those Jews still alive, sending 97,000 prisoners to the arenas in Rome, or to be sold in slavery. And many others escaped to various parts of the empire. They took the temple treasures back to Rome, the seven-branched candlestick known as the menorah, made of silver and weighing more than one ton, an altar, and the curtain which had surrounded the Holy of Holies. The temple was demolished, thus fulfilling Christ's prophecy that not one stone would be left upon another. All that was left was the foundation of the West Wall. This became known as the Wailing Wall because of a law which existed for a time that no Jew could enter Jerusalem under pain of death, except once every 4 years on the anniversary of the destruction of the temple. And Jews might go to this wall and weep. The famous Arch of Titus in Rome, which was constructed in 82 AD by the Roman Emperor Domitian, shortly after the death of his older brother Titus, to commemorate Titus's victories over the Jews. It depicts Roman legionaries carrying the Temple of Jerusalem's treasures, including the menorah, during Titus's triumphal procession in Rome. Not all the rebellion in Judea was put down, though, until 73 AD, so it was several more years before it was completely put down. Some of my students who were in Rome back a couple of years ago saw the Arch of Titus, which is right in that major part of the city there, of course, not far from the Vatican, actually.
Now, one pocket of resistance was at Masada. Tell us the story.
Yes, it's a very famous story. In fact, the country of Israel, really, this is a very important story, of course, for the present Jewish state. One group of zealots, including the women and children, escaped to the mountain fortress of Masada. It was the name for a site of ancient palaces and fortifications in Judea on top of an isolated rock plateau on the eastern edge of the Judean desert, overlooking the Dead Sea. According to Josephus, a first century Jewish historian that we've quoted several times, Herod the Great fortified Masada between 37 and 31 BC as a refuge for himself in the event of a revolt against his reign. As Father Arminio tells the story, quote, with ample supplies of food and water, they hoped that they could outwait the Roman legion camped in the desert at the foot of the cliff. But the Romans used Jewish slaves to build up an earthen ramp and assaulted the fortress with a heavy wooden tower, pushed up the ramp. Realizing that they were doomed, the last of the zealots committed mass suicide, every man, woman, and child dying. About a thousand total.
Didn't the revolt create a lot of anti-Jewish sentiment in the empire?
Oh, yes, it did. Because many Roman citizens were killed in various parts of the empire, and a lot of Christians were killed as well. It sort of reminds you of the situation today where you find some of these radical Muslims killing Christians wherever they can in that whole Middle Eastern part of the world. Well, back then, the Jews were killing Christians pretty much the same way. We discussed in one of our series how Marcion of Sinope arrived in Rome about 140 AD, soon after the end of the Third Jewish War, known as the Bar Kokhba Revolt. One scholar claims that this revolution, along with other Jewish Roman wars, that is the Great Jewish Revolt and Quito's War, provided some of the historical context of the founding of Marcionism. We talked about that in some detail, as I said, in another series. He was very anti-Jewish, which was reflected in his heretical doctrines and biblical scholarship. He was excommunicated from the Catholic Church because of his heresy. He had claimed that the Old Testament had nothing to do with Christianity. He claimed that the God of the Old Testament was an evil God who created the material universe, whereas the good God of the Christians created the spiritual world. And, of course, as we've discussed in some of our other series, this is nothing but a form of Gnosticism and dualism.
This sounds like Zoroastrian influence.
There could have been some of that.
Because, you know, that dualism, especially the good versus evil. What happened to the church after the Jewish War?
In 79 AD, Titus succeeded his father as emperor. And in that same year, Linus, the second pope, died, possibly martyred, to be succeeded by Pope Cletus, who is believed to have reigned from AD to 92 AD. Domitian succeeded his brother Titus in 86. The Armenio informs us that at first Domitian seemed to be reasonably a good ruler, but the vast power he possessed drove him to paranoia, so they believed that he was surrounded by enemies. He established a reign of terror through the use of informers, drove all philosophers from Italy, ordered all citizens to swear by and sacrifice to the divine genius of himself, and he persecuted Christians. During this persecution, an attempt was made to martyr the Apostle John, the only apostle still alive. The attempt was miraculously foiled, so instead John was exiled to the island of Patmos in the Mediterranean, and there he wrote the last book of the Bible, the book of Revelation, or the Apocalypse. Pope Cletus was martyred in 92 and was succeeded by Clement, who reigned from 92 to 101. From Clement, we have a letter to the Corinthians written to settle disputes wherever they might arise. Father Armenio states that, quote, "This evidence contradicts the enemies of the church who have said that the Pope was not regarded as anyone special until several centuries after Christ."
Now, we have completed our brief survey of history of the Catholic Church after St. Paul and St. Peter's martyrdom. Is there anything else you want to say about this before we move on to another topic?
Well, I think our time is about to run out,
so we'll.
Why don't we wait until the beginning of the next one, and I'll kind of summarize
this
and then start into our next topic. Which, of course, has to do with the idea that Jesus having a ready-made church when he came into the world.
That sounds great. Once again, thank you for your time, and we'll meet again next session.
Quis omnis et omnipotens quem